First case on calendar this morning would be the Fonts versus Brockie, 64616. If counsel is ready to proceed, please do so. Please make sure you announce your name. If you wish to reserve any time, please tell us how much.
Thank you very much. My name is Ross Moynihan. I'm here representing the appellant. I think I would like about 5 minutes at the end. However, if questions and argument touch over that, we'll see what time we have left.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. So, really the reason why we're here is because we had a trial, and the verdict was in favor of the appellant, but the appellant, who's the plaintiff in the action, filed a motion for additor or for a new trial. The additor, we believe, was appropriate because the damages awarded to plaintiff were wholly and completely inadequate. We moved for a new trial on the grounds that we believe that there were numerous abuses of discretion and numerous errors of law that were properly objected to by the plaintiff trial. The first issue that I'd like to talk about is the failure of the jury to make an award of future damages. It was easily shown and clear that the plaintiff in this action suffered permanent injuries that would affect him in the future, that were not resolved at the time of trial and would not be resolved. I'll give you some examples. One, as a result of this motor vehicle accident, the plaintiff had to have his spleen removed during emergency surgery. Of course, spleens don't grow back. It was also the testimony of his treating physicians and experts that the plaintiff would suffer future pain and suffering as a result of the removal of the spleen. Furthermore, the small intestine or a portion of the small intestine of the plaintiff was removed, particularly a portion that regulates urine flow to the colon. Again, this is a future damage that plaintiff will suffer pain and suffering for in the future. Furthermore, the plaintiff suffered a compression fracture to the lumbar spine that resulted in a 20% loss of vertebral height. Of course, that is something that is permanent and will cause pain and suffering of the plaintiff for the rest of his life.
So that issue wasn't conflicting testimony offered by two medical doctors, so the jury had the position of both plaintiff and defendant as to the possibility of that?
With respect to the lumbar spine, the vertebral height, well, there are really two issues. There's the L2 level, and then there's the resulting pain down below in L4-5, L5-S1.
To be very specific, there was evidence presented in terms of competitive cheerleading team following the accident and so on, but more importantly, as I indicated, the experts, Dr. Brodner and Dr., I guess, Schaffney?
Schaffney, yeah.
Their positions?
Well, sure. You know,
But I guess what I'm saying is the jury had this in front of them.
That's correct. But what was not in dispute was the loss in the vertebral height causing, number one, which can't be resolved throughout the lifetime of the plaintiff and which will cause him future pain and suffering. I don't think that medically can be controverted, and I don't believe that it was controverted. I believe the main issue was the lower lumbar spine, that L4-5, L5-S1 level. was the major bone of contention with respect to the conflicting testimony.
But counsel, isn't the issue of the award of future damages something for the trier of fact to decide? I mean, just as Justice Douglas said, they had the doctors conflicting, and I certainly see your argument.
Yeah.
Perhaps if the three of us were on the jury, we'd agree with you 100%, you know, like on the future damages, but it's really their kind of call, isn't it? The total verdict was, what, around 365?
That's correct. And I want to make something kind of clear here. It's uncontroverted. Let's take the lumbar spine out of it, okay, because there's dispute, and I'm sure Mr. Atkin will say something contrary to what I'm saying. But let's just look at the spleen. Let's look at the pain and discomfort associated with the removal of the portion of the small intestine that regulates the flow of urine to the colon.
We're talking, your argument is as to future damages. Removal would be past. So
that's correct. But the result of the past removal is what he has to suffer from for the rest of his life. Furthermore, he has to suffer from the scarring from the emergency surgery that he had. Scarring is also recognized and it's briefed as a compensable future damage. The fact of the matter is that these things were uncontroverted at trial, and the jury just disregarded that.
But didn't I assume at the closing argument did you argue this, Mr. Stovall?
Mr. Stovall argued it.
Okay, and he's certainly a capable attorney, and I'm sure he made a strong and passionate plea why there should be future damages. I'm sure Mr. Atkins said, no, there shouldn't be, and then it's up to the jury to make the call.
Very much so, but when it's uncontroverted like this, the jury just can't disregard it.
Counsel, you keep using that wonderful term, uncontroverted.
Correct.
But we had seemed to have testimony from two sets of doctors as to this issue who didn't agree.
Well,
I understand your position.
You're
an advocate for your side.
And thank you. I don't think Dr. Schiaffini, who's a pain management doctor, or Dr. Brandner, who works at the Desert Orthopedic Center and who commented on the lumbar spine, are capable of giving intestinal and spleen testimony, and I don't think that they actually did. I think what the issue here is that there were these removal of these body parts and resulting scarring that support future damage awards. How much? We don't exactly know, but something. The fact that the jury excluded the future damage award completely is what the real issue here is.
Right. And I think we understand that from your perspective.
So,
can I ask you about another issue? You had the Social Security benefit application.
Yes.
You're arguing it's a violation of the collateral source rule. Tell me how come. What is it about it that violates the collateral source rule?
Sure. You know, the collateral source rule excludes evidence that shows that there is another source of compensation for the plaintiff other than recovery from the defendant. Okay, so this can be in the form of health insurance, it can be in the form of Social Security disability. Now, what's raised in the responding brief is the claim, well, you know, he was denied for Social Security disability and he didn't receive any payments. Well, I'm not aware of case law, and I think the brief says this, of the denial of a Social Security benefit and no payment overcoming the collateral source rule. I think that if you bring in evidence of the collateral source rule, it opens the jury up to the fact that the plaintiff has other avenues apart from the recovery of the defendant, and that's what's prejudicial and confusing to the jury.
I see, but I always thought it had to do with amounts, like if there are medical liens or, you know, what was paid versus what was billed type issues and all is generally what we deal with in collateral source. This was kind of an interesting thing. We had an application for it, but it did not result in showing any payment, though, to him because it was denied.
That's correct.
That's why I'm wondering why you think it's a violation, because if it had showed a payment, maybe it would have been, but if it didn't.
That's exactly my point. is that the very fact that you show the jury that there are collateral source or sources, avenues by which the plaintiff has to compensate him for the injuries that he suffered, that's what's prejudicial.
In this particular case, wasn't there a motion as to that use? The court initially granted it with limitations, some redacting.
You know,
if I understand, and I just hear me out, and then you can comment. And then the court imposed some limitations, and in presenting your case, you decided you wanted to get out in front of it, so to speak. And so more came in than possibly what the court had originally indicated could come in.
The very fact that the court allowed this information in is the problem. When the court allowed the information in, then the plaintiff was left with, how do we deal with this? And throughout that whole, and for instance, if you look at the opening argument of Mr. Stovall, what he's saying is, hey, judge, we're objecting to this thing. It's all the way through the discussions in between, because there was a break and opening argument before that issue was dealt with. The objection to the admission of that Social Security disability information was objected to throughout. The fact is that we just had to deal with it, and that's how we dealt with it. Now,
I want to ask you about what you really want out of this case. You want us to send it back for a new trial and take a chance on losing your complete verdict with some kind of defense verdict, or a jury that decides to maybe ignore the law completely and take away this
verdict? That is the relief we're asking for.
Is the client familiar with the fact that you want to take away a $300,000 verdict and try it again?
The client is absolutely aware of that.
We're at the 358 mark at this point, so unless you have another point you want to cover, if you want to...
Oh, there's a whole bunch. I'll save it if we can. Thank you very much.
Mr. Atkins?
Yes, thank you. Justice Douglas? Thank you for agreeing to hear this case. It's very important to my client. I'd also like to thank my co-counsel, Andy Smith, for preparing for this and wrote a wonderful brief, I think, touching on all the issues.
If we could have you start kind of a reverse order, the last issue that counsel was raising in terms of the collateral source rule. If you
Yes, address that.
Yes.
Certainly. I don't think it violates the collateral source rule based on this court's definition of what a collateral source is under Proctor versus Castelletti. Quote, the collateral source rule provides that if an injured party receives some compensation for his injuries from a source wholly independent of the tortfeasor, there was no compensation for these injuries. There's no Nevada case law getting any further, but what if it wasn't paid? That's where Mr. Smith cited in our brief the Lieberman's case. It's a Florida appellate court from 2002, which addressed the very precise issue, and it indicated, quoting, the fact that both these statements were made in application for Social Security benefits does not introduce evidence of receipt of benefits from a collateral source. Indeed, since Poling was denied benefits pursuant to this application, there was no collateral source. I think that's a wise a decision addressing the collateral source issue. Is there anything else you'd like me to address on that particular topic, Justice?
Justice Cherry?
Justices?
No, I'm just curious as to, you've been an insurance defense attorney for a long time. Have you ever seen a case where a large verdict like this, that they want a new trial and take another shot at it because there weren't future damages?
It's interesting. I had that thought myself.
I've never seen this. Of course, I've only been around for 45 years. What do I know?
Right. The other issue with that Social Security coming into evidence, Justice Douglas, I think you raised the point of Judge Baer did do, I think, a yeoman's job in recognizing that, well, it's evidence, it's objective evidence. The plaintiff applied for these benefits. He was examined. It falls within numerous exceptions of a hearsay rule, but to avoid any prejudice to the plaintiff, be it under the collateral guise of collateral source or not, he fashioned the instructions he told counsel. I will fashion instructions. We won't call it an application for Social Security disability benefits. We'll say he was examined by this doctor, and this was the fashion, this was the application. Plaintiff's counsel then made the strategic decision of calling it a Social Security disability application and went full bore into it, and I think that is invited error, and that's not proper to then say, well, they considered this, but it was the plaintiff appellant who introduced that evidence himself. Circling back to the future damages argument, there was conflicting evidence as to the extent of the future damages. I argued that no such damages should be awarded. Mr. Stovall argued they should. I argued that because there was evidence presented during the course of the trial that there was no future damages. In fact, it was substantial evidence. First, there was the finding of Dr. Sherman, the Social Security disability doctor, who made observations he had no limitations and described the lumbar fracture as healed. That was the same conclusion reached by the doctors I retained, Drs. Schaffini and Dr. Bradner. Moreover, it was also the opinion of Dr. Muir that that compression fracture had healed and that there was no residual effect. Indeed, shortly after 2009, I believe it's 2010, that's when the plaintiff engaged in cheerleading competitions and for a year, and then filmed himself and his sister on Christmas Eve doing a backflip in a video. That was certainly consistent with, well, there's no future residual injuries as evidenced by this substantial evidence. So there was indeed evidence of no future damages as it pertained to the lumbar spine. It had healed, fully healed. Addressing the spleen and colon issue, plaintiff was awarded damages for past pain and suffering, for being in the hospital, having a spleen removed, and then the year of healing. But as to future pain and suffering, future problems with regard to his spleen and his colon, that requires expert medical testimony, because it's not like an amputation or a bone sticking out. It requires expert medical testimony. The plaintiff's doctor, Dr. Browder, did not testify or provide any testimony at trial regarding future medical treatment that would be required for his spleen or his colon or anything else. They did that for his back. Dr. Muir came in and says, well, I disagree with Schaffini and Bradner, and despite what's on the video, he will need these treatments. They put that evidence in there, and it was possible they could award that if the jury so decided. Dr. Browder was asked no such questions, and he offered no testimony in that regard. And that is necessary when attempting to award damages for future medical expenses and future pain and suffering, and it just wasn't there. Regarding the application itself, was that properly admitted? I think it was. It was not hearsay. It was the plaintiff's own statement, and he was subject to cross-examination at the time of trial regarding the statements he made in terms of what he could and could not do following the accident. Is there anything else you would like me to address on those two topics?
No. Could I ask one question on the it wasn't discussed in the opening argument that's raised, and it's the last issue in the opening brief, is the juror issue, that it was allegedly coercive with the length of the deliberations and so on and so forth. What was the final verdict? Was it 7-1, the final verdict on this case?
Yes, it was.
And I assume the one gentleman and filed the app was the one who voted against
that's
the
correct
verdict and like that. So 7 of the other jurors agreed with the verdict.
Yes.
Do you have any comment about this thing about the length of the deliberations or how the judge
I can provide
it?
some backdrop, because I remember it very well. That doesn't happen all the time, that you get a verdict that late. Mm-hmm. It was an 8-day trial, and it was I was working with Mr. Stovall, you know, scheduling my experts. When are you going to be done? When are you going to be done? And it just kept dragging out. Well, we run up against the hard Friday. We're now in the eighth day. That's what we agreed. I had one day to put on all my experts and my whole case, one day. And the judge asked, Judge Baer, would you like to complete it? I said, yeah, I would. But he says, I'll ask the jurors. So he numerous times asked the jury, are you okay with going late tonight? Yes, we all want to be done. We want to be done. He offered, I can bring in food for you. He brought in pizza for them. Later in the evening, as we're arguing, he brought in donuts and coffee. They were all very appreciative. I remember doing closing argument with jurors with coffee and donuts. It was rather unique. But they were all willing to do that. And as to the affidavit of that one juror, I don't think it's proper consideration to overturn the verdict because it goes into the deliberative process.
Well, we can't consider the deliberative issue. But as far as the timing and how late they deliberate, I guess we could look at that.
Right.
But that's the background. It seemed at least the majority, seven of them, it appears, would consent to the late deliberation.
Indeed, Judge Baer went to great lengths to make sure that they were comfortable and they were okay with that, and counsel was okay with it as well, both plaintiff and defense counsel. So I don't think that played any role in the outcome. And then finally, with regard to even assuming arguendo, that your honors find that, well, that Social Security application should not have come in, or Dr. Sherman's findings come in, or anything else, it is improper for anyone outside of the jury to set aside what the jury decided if there was other substantial evidence to support the verdict that was arrived at. And I believe there was certainly substantial evidence, not only in the form of the testimony of Drs. Schiaffini and Bradner, but also in the evidence that was presented to the plaintiff doing backflips and engaging in a year of cheerleading competition in 2010 at a time when he claimed to have been totally disabled and unable to.
And what was presented? Was there a movie or photos of this backflip?
Yes, and this was cutting edge back then, but there was a MySpace, when MySpace was still a website, of the plaintiff and his sister. They do what they'd called a family flip. One, two, three. And from a standstill, they both did a flip. And so that was played to the jury. It was on the internet. It was open and played to them.
So some they posted themselves on their social media.
Yes. And the plaintiff and his sister also then were on a competitive cheerleading competition team. They went to, I think it was Disney World. And there was videos uploaded that was played for the jurors of them engaging in cheerleading moves and competitions and bending and jumping. So, again, that goes to the future damages. It didn't appear to the jury that there was any future pain and suffering going on at that juncture and he fully healed. Is there anything else Justice would like me to?
The court doesn't have anything you wish to leave us with in terms of your position as to either the new trial or remanding as to the editor.
The defendant's, the respondent's position is that Judge Baer rightfully denied the motion for new trial and rightfully denied the motion for editor because there was substantial evidence to support the jury's conclusions.
Is there any case law that says the Supreme Court, the appellate court, can send the case back just for editor and not for a new trial?
You know what? That's a good question, Justice Terry, and I don't know the answer to that right off the bat.
I think they're asking for a new trial, really, more than
just. I think they would want one, but I think that they had the one bite at the apple, and there was substantial evidence to support exactly what the jury did in this case.
I think.
And I don't think it should be disturbed by your honors, because that's something.
It does answer Justice Terry's question. I believe the law is that. That they're entitled. I mean, there would have to be a new trial if there were, if we were going to consider additor. I mean, I don't think you can just add to the right verdict. You know, you have to have that as the alternative.
I had that case.
I'll hear from counsel. That's my recollection.
Okay, and I had that particular case where that happened. Where you, did I deny the additor? Actually, the additor was not agreed to by the defense attorneys, and then I denied the new trial when it came up here.
No.
Okay.
And went back for a new trial.
It might have been my partner Tom Winter's case, if I'm not mistaken. So I should know, but I apologize for not. But I don't think there's grounds, legal grounds, to set aside the jury's verdict and have one more shot at the apple in this case.
All right.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Mayhammer?
Thank you. Are there any questions?
My question would be on this conflicting evidence issue of the future damages. What about this MySpace? I mean, it seems like that a jury could conclude that maybe you're not hurting physically and all you can do is backflips and stuff.
The more I've recently practiced in personal injury cases, I've learned, and the testimony came out, that, you know, when you have these types of spinal conditions and you take your prescribed medication for pain, that you can do things that you would normally do that you couldn't possibly do with the pain. And I think that's something that runs through all the cases that that the court has seen. And, you know, is it good for his spine to be doing this? I think there's testimony from the chiropractor that said it's not like what he should be doing. But, you know, Peyton Manning can still play football after cervical fusions. So the very fact that you have this spinal condition does not impede you from doing activities.
I understand that. I guess Mr. Atkins' point was that it's a conflicting testimony. You have this evidence of the backflip, so the jury could consider your client's testimony and the other evidence, mm-hmm. and it's up to they just determine not to grant future damages, and it's really their call. So anything else you want to say about that?
Future damages, yeah, I would. And, you know, if you take the loss of organs away, you take the spine away, you're still left with the scarring from all of these emergency surgeries. That in and of itself is a future damage.
But can't that be awarded as present damages if you have the scar and you show the evidence of the scar and all of the jury can say, okay, yeah, that's part of our calculus as to the current damages, you know, and award that knowing that the scar maybe isn't going to get worse in the future. So it could be part of that composition of damages. And
I don't think it is, because the definition of a future damage is a is essentially something that's permanent, something that lasts beyond the trial that we're deliberating on.
It's saying you're going to live with the scar forever. So it's
and correct. And
where was the scar located?
I think it's around the spleen area the organs were taken out of him.
It was on the stomach then, like that,
yeah.
The scar.
I'm not a doctor. But yeah, I wasn't at the trial.
I assume it's on the...
I'd assume so too.
Yeah. It wasn't on his face or...
No, that's correct. And without conceding the other injuries, which, again, the evidence in the record... that they are uncontroverted, that these injuries are permanent. An award of future damages was appropriate, even if it was a small amount. Something was appropriate. It shouldn't have been just completely excluded. Now, with the issue of the collateral source problem, you know, we cite case law in the brief that the that evidence is inadmissible in a personal injury case. We cited case law saying that it's hearsay. What was argued in the brief was that it falls within the catch-all exception. Well, you know,
Number one, the examination was completely different standard for Social Security disability.
Finish your thought.
Sure. The doctor was hired by the Social Security administrator, and therefore there's an inherent bias there, and we should have at least gotten the opportunity to cross-examine this doctor. The doctor, there's testimony that his examination was only 5 to 10 minutes, and we heard testimony from pain management doctors in plaintiff's favor who have been treating him for 7 years. Also, the you know, all these things add up, and all the other issues on the collateral source problem, or on the hearsay problem, or the problems with the admission of this Social Security information, they all add up to the point where we should have been able to at least cross-examine. And if you look at the record and the appendix from respondent, you'll see that they did not exhaust their ability they had to get this witness in for at least a deposition so we could cross-examine. You know, when I get a government agency who's telling me they want to produce something, I get an order compelling it.
Well, isn't there a specific regulation as to the Social Security doctors?
You know, it does not preclude the calling of that doctor. In fact, essentially the doctor was called at trial through the admission of essentially a hearsay document, an improper expert report from a physician who did a 5 to 10 minute examination.
Your time is up at this juncture.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, counsel, on both sides
for their arguments this day, giving this additional information as the matter before us. This matter will stand submitted.